Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It is a busy National Letter of Intent Day. Good Wednesday. We have a bunch of different directions we're going to go. This is one of those shows that I like to just put together as we go. I don't know. Eric was out at something this morning at a signing. I say something. He's out at a signing event this morning. Jordan has been out at signing events. Big Devin Henry has been all over the recruiting stuff. They're all here, and they're working on stuff, so I just may pull them in. It's one of those shows that Chairman of the Board, Jared Nielsen, the Iron Man, will hate. Because I'll just say, get somebody in here now because I feel like talking to them. There's no script. This could be a total train wreck show. I love these shows. I absolutely... It's nothing better than when I was in live TV mode. Like, live radio is a lot of fun. Live radio is a lot of fun. And when there's breaking news, it's a blast. Live television, breaking news, fun. When someone comes in and says, we have to do A plus B plus C plus D, put me to sleep. And it's got to be timed out exactly right. And it, No. Not on a day like today. We're going to have Ralph Amsden with us here in a couple minutes. Devin Henry, who's been all over the recruiting side on the west side of the valley, he's going to jump on board. I may pull Jordan and Eric in here if they're free. We'll have Michael Fabiano with us today, the Fabiano Focus. Fantasy football guys, you're in the finals or semifinals in your league. So I've got Michael jump on here with all the bad, brutal quarterback play. We'll have Talk to the Lopes. And we'll go deep into the men's volleyball program on GCU, Talk to the Lopes, as we do every week here on Sports360AZ.com. Our television show tonight and throughout the week on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sessmatt, Football AZ. A lot of recruiting news, and we'll also be in Vegas, part of our friends over at Santan Ford and the Arizona Ford dealers. All that to say, let's get you caught up. What is on my mind? Opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. I have my Sagicor shirt on today. Yep, see it right there? So here's the deal. I took my test. I took and got my license to actually be in a space where I can talk to you if I want to, or if you want to, more importantly than me, that I can sit and listen. Yesterday, I was in a conference room, and I was talking with a former professional athlete who's trying to figure some things out in their life. You never know when things can come up. There's been some things that have come up. And so we're able to sit there and try to connect dots on, are you protected? Is mama protected? Are kids protected? If something were to happen to you, or maybe it's looking at some diversity within your portfolio. Log on and get your free information right there online at Sagicor Now. That's Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. The biggest story today is Joe Garagiola Jr. is back in sports in the Valley. Joe Garagiola Jr. is back with the Diamondbacks. They brought him back this morning in the title of assistant to the president with Derek Hall. And I'm trying to find Joe as we're doing the show today. So Joe may jump on with us as well as we work through the morning. Let's bring in Ralph Amsden first on the recruiting side. Today is National Letter of Intent Day. Nobody has seen more high school football than Ralph Amsden. He's been with Arizona Varsity. He, of course, has the founder of C-Town Rivals. And I don't even know if you're still doing all that stuff. I could give you a better title. But for you, you're somebody that has been all over the state. So right off the top, what do you make out of Letter of Intent Day so far? Any surprises to you, Ralph?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to do is just go ahead and get ready of the early part of early signing day, because this is the new signing day. I mean, this is when it's all going down. For the most part, I think you're going to see 80 to 85% of the kids who are eligible or who were already deep into their recruitment go ahead and make their ultimate decision. And that happens so quickly. This is only the second year, and it's become pretty much expected. That if a college has offered you a scholarship and you verbally committed, that you're going to go ahead and lock it in December instead of February. And I find that to be really, really interesting because, you know, it's become a little bit, well, it's always been an arms race, but, you know, colleges take it as an insult if you plan on waiting at all. So you're seeing some things today happen, like Alabama tell Noah Pola-Gates that, hey, if you don't make it official right now, then you're no longer part of our plans. And he said, well, that's not part of my plan. So, you know, ultimately that decision gets made for him, and he moves on to other colleges who are willing to wait him out.
So let's go right into Noah Poligates, because that is the biggest name on the board from what I've seen who is still out there. And with Alabama out of the picture, I know Arizona State is feeling as though they're in a very good position to land him. However, there's a lot of competition. Let's just localize this. Is ASU still in the running for Noah Poligates from your view?
They are. I think, you know, there's a few things there. The fact that he would get to be close to home, that it wouldn't be an issue for his family to see him. The Champions Life program with Gene Boyd, with all of the academic assistance, is something that appeals to him a great deal. The fact that they're willing to wait for him is something that he's definitely interested in. But at the same time, you know, you've got the rabid fans of Nebraska and an exciting program that has a lot of open spots for you to come and contribute right away. And a program who's also, you know, recruiting good friend and family member Matthew Polamau as well. And then you have USC and the appeal of, you know, following in the line of Troy Polamalu's footsteps and really the university that's probably the pinnacle of anybody who has any Polynesian heritage, you know, grows up dreaming of playing at USC. So ASU's got to contend with those two things, but the hometown hero thing is definitely something that appeals to him.
Then you have Javon Wright, Buddha Wright over at Hamilton, who's going to sign with Nebraska. From my understanding, later today he's going to follow through on that. So the point of this is you have major programs from across the country that have descended on Maricopa County. It's no longer this little secret. You had Keaton Slovis this morning sign his deal with USC. Gunnar Crew's going to Washington State. And names you and I could throw out. But for fans, this is no longer just a stopover. This has become a major recruiting hub, right? Or am I wrong?
You are absolutely right. The problem is there are still a lot of colleges that don't know how right you are. Arizona is being mined by a lot of really great schools. I mean, we see schools come in every single year and pepper Arizona with offers that we never used to see before, whether that's Penn State. Iowa State has obviously had some success. You know, Louisville. We're seeing the names of these schools that coaches make it a priority to stop in, but, you know, coaches need to make it more of a priority to send somebody here every single time you're allowed to. You know, whether that be, you know, the way that Texas has with Tim Beck recently. But, you know, there are a lot of really good players here. And with JUCO going away, there's going to be even more opportunities. And so one of the things that made me happiest this morning was to wake up and see that Zarek Brown, the Millennium quarterback, had been offered by CSU Pueblo, a championship-winning, Division II program.
Yep.
You know, those are the schools that need to come in and really capitalize on the fact that Arizona has so much to offer.
Okay, before you get out here talking with Ralph Amston, if you look over at ASU and U of A, any surprises early on today for either school, guys that have flipped, guys that may flip, guys that are flipping this way?
Well, I mean, Arizona State took a pretty big gamble taking three quarterbacks, and so everybody's really holding their breath right now to see if Joey Yellen's letter of intent is going to come in, because Georgia's making a late push, and that's a school that he took an official visit to. As far as University of Arizona, my biggest surprise is that this is an incredibly deep class for in-state. And, you know, U of A took an offensive lineman from Marana, a punter from Desert Vista, and beyond that, they're looking to Texas and California. We'll ultimately see if that pays off for Kevin Sumlin or if that hurts them in their efforts to get some of these 2020 local kids down to Tucson.
Good stuff there, Ralph. Appreciate you joining us on short notice, just wanting to bounce around. There's Ralph Amston there for a few minutes, things that he has seen around the recruiting front. Devin Henry is part of our staff. Devin's been on board about 2 months now, and he's done a really good job in looking at the west side of Phoenix. I've felt as though that's been an area that has been neglected, and Devin is just all over that. He's jumping in the chair where Eric usually sits. So what's going on today on the west side? Let's just focus west side of the valley. And are there some – there are many players out there. Just give me a few and what's gone on this morning so far.
Yeah, west side's a little bit wild, especially more wild than usual. You got two Cal commits over at Liberty with Braxton Croteau and Ryan Puskas. They're committed. They're going to sign live. They have their Sooner Broadcast Network streaming that live, actually, so that'll be a lot of fun. You look at Peoria, who's not a 4A powerhouse, but they're typically in the running, you know, other besides Saguaro and South Point, but they have their running back, who's been phenomenal all year long, Juwan Price, going to New Mexico State. And then a fun storyline that I got to talk to Jacob Golden, the offensive lineman, about was he is going to commit and sign today with Boise State, which is where Chase Cord, who was the Sunrise Mountain quarterback just a couple years ago, is currently playing right now. He had a touchdown earlier in the year, and I talked to him earlier this year for the Cactus Peoria rivalry that we had here, a story on Sports 360 AZ, and I said, is it weird you're going to be protecting the enemy next year possibly? You know, in a couple of years, you know, you might have a Peoria O-lineman protecting a Sunrise Mountain quarterback. I think that's a really fun story. And the now Sunrise Mountain QB, Keegan Freed, going on over to Air Force. So, you know, we were talking on the five-star sit-down not too long ago with me and Jordan. And I know us, too, when you we call games a lot for play-by-play. And, you know, you've seen Gunnar Cruz a lot, but it's just weird going the Washington State commit, the Texas commit, the Oklahoma commit, the Cal commit, the ASU commit. It's been a really strange year in that, but it's so much fun to watch.
Okay, Centennial always has players top to bottom. What's going on at Centennial today? If fans have not been paying attention, 5A state champs just rolling right through everybody.
Yeah, the 5A state champs. But what's so unique about Centennial is how young they are. They have so many young juniors at quarterback, defensive core, offensive core. So Tui Walker's going to be going out today and doing his thing. And besides that, man, there's quite a few going out and signing, but the surprising thing to me is how few are going to be signed today because of how much like their quarterback, Jonathan Morris, they're still a young junior. So next year, though, that's going to be a huge pot that I think a lot of college groups are going to be picking a pot out of.
Okay, good stuff there. There's Devin Henry, and he's jumping in on board. Jordan's in the back bullpen, and Eric back there as well. I'll bring them on in the next hour before we wrap things up. Up next, though, we'll switch gears. Michael Fabiano, Fantasy Football Focus, big part of what we do with the NFL Network. They partner, Michael does, with us. It's good to have Michael's content. That's on the other side as you get ready for semifinals and finals in this NFL weekend. Straight ahead, I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's get right to it with Michael Fabiano. The Hall of Famer joins us. It's playoff time. No reason to laugh and ha-ha too much. Unless you have something you want to laugh and ha-ha about right off the top here with fantasy fans, because...
No, man, this past week was crazy with all of the big-name quarterbacks who just absolutely tanked. Breeze, Cam last night, Brady, Big Ben.
Goff.
It was a very odd week. Goff was... I mean, the list goes on and on. Yeah. Rodgers.
Yeah.
You would have been better off to start Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, four rookies this week, than some of those big names.
Well, and let's get right to it then. Okay, from the mailbag, straight down the line, I'm getting questions about Jared Goff or Matt Ryan, Jared Goff or Josh Allen. I mean, where do you go on this one? It's playoffs.
I know. For me, Matt Ryan would be the better play this week. I mean, Goff has – it's odd. It's like he's a different player. It's like he morphed back into his rookie season over the last few weeks, and I know the offensive line has some issues, and Todd Gurley's banged up right now. I still don't know if I can start Josh Allen over Jared Goff, although he has been the highest scoring quarterback in fantasy football over the last 4 weeks. Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
So if you are someone who is bold, I can absolutely see you benching Goff for Josh Allen. Just keep in mind, Patriots, home game for the Pats, Belichick against a rookie quarterback. So that one scares me a little bit.
DeAndre Hopkins, Josh Gordon, do I need to pick up a wide receiver? Are those two good this week in playoffs? Question.
I mean, Nuke is always tremendous, and I think Gordon's fine. The matchup's not great this week, but it also depends on what's out there. If Dante Pettis is out there, he could be somebody you could potentially plug and play.
Baker Mayfield, Deshaun Watson.
I love Mayfield's matchup this week. I'm still going with Deshaun Watson. Mayfield is a streamer for players who don't have a better option at quarterback, and I feel like Deshaun Watson is a better option at quarterback this week against Philadelphia.
I need a quarterback in the worst way. I have Dak and Carson Wentz. Most of other good quarterbacks aren't available. Good waiver wire QB for a dang championship, as she put it.
Start Dak because, like, I get it. Last week was a stinker. I get it. I'm a Cowboys fan. I know. It was bad. But the Buccaneers have not allowed a home quarterback to finish worse than 11th in fantasy points this season. They're bad against quarterbacks on the road, so start Dak.
Running back, so a lot about Jamal Williams, Elijah McGuire, Kalen Ballage on the waiver wire. Where are you at this week with those guys?
Well, first off, you've got to go out and get him. If Aaron Jones doesn't play for the Packers, I would consider Jamal Williams at the very worst a volume-based flex starter, and I think he could be better. Kalen Ballage, I don't know what Adam Gase has against Kenyon Drake, but he just won't give him a featured role. When Frank Gore went out last week, it was Ballage who saw more touches than Drake, and I could see that moving forward. The Dolphins right now are not a team that's looking like they're going to the playoffs, so Ballage could end up seeing more snaps and more touches than Drake this week, regardless the matchup is not great for either one of those two against the Jaguars, although the Jaguars did give a big game to Derrick Henry a couple of weeks ago. Overall, they've been pretty tough on runners.
The Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano with us in the championship game. I've got James Conner, McCaffrey, Justin Jackson, or waiver wire. What's your view?
Well, if James Conner is active, then clearly he's the guy, and McCaffrey's a no-brainer. Justin Jackson's value is probably going to tank this week, assuming Melvin Gordon comes back. And it appears that Gordon has a good chance to come back because he said that if last week's game was on a Sunday, he would have played. It was on a Thursday, so he sat out. Keep tabs on his status, though, because Gordon, you can't bench Melvin Gordon if he's active for the Chargers and expected to see a full slate of touches.
Cooks, Lockett, or Gronk at flex for the championship?
Cooks, Lockett, or Gronk? Gronkowski has disappeared.
Yeah.
I don't know what alternative tight end this team has. He's disappeared. For me, it's Brandon Cooks, but it also depends on that matchup. So it's a tough call. Lockett has, you know what? I'm actually gonna rethink that. Brandon Cooks against the Cardinals, against Lockett, against Kansas City. I'm going to go Lockett now that I think about it.
It's good that you think about it. I'm fine with that. That's the way it should be.
Well, you know,
a little thought into it.
I know, man. I haven't gotten into the matchups very much yet because we're early in the week. But the way that Rams offense has struggled, and Lockett has been one of the most reliable wide receivers in fantasy football this season, although Doug Baldwin stole some of his thunder this past week, I think if you want to play it safe, you're starting Tyler Lockett. If you're shooting for the moon, then you're going with Cooks.
A couple other questions, we'll let him go. Browns D against Cincinnati or Houston D against Phil?
Great matchups for both. I kind of like the Browns. I really do. This is a Bengals offense that is without its quarterback in Andy Dalton. They are now without their top two wide receivers in A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd. So it could be Alex Erickson catching passes from Jeff Driscoll. And the Browns are going to be playing on their home field. That is a recipe for some fantasy points for that Browns defense.
Who do I leave as the odd man out for the championship? I like how every question is for the championship, Michael. Like, don't screw this up.
At this point, that's all there's left.
Kamara, Henry, Cook, or Chubb?
This is just a humble brag. Whoever sent this question, because that's four studs. So Kamara is a play. They're all good. If I had to pick two, Kamara would be a guy that I'd have in my lineup, and it would probably end up being Nick Chubb as the two because the Bengals defense is so bad. But, dude, you can put four faces on a dartboard with those dudes and just throw two. And wherever they hit, those are the two guys you start because they're all really good plays. That is a humble brag, my friend.
Play Vikings defense or pick up Titans? Which is the better play?
I like the Vikings, although the Titans defense is a tremendous play this week too, and they've been very good over the last several weeks. And they're playing the Redskins, and the Redskins are on their fourth-string quarterback. But the Vikings are playing in Detroit. You know what? I'm going to go Titans here. This is close for me. Thinking about it, I like Minnesota's defense, but in this case, because we're looking at home road, I would rather have the defense that's at home, so I'm going to go with the Titans.
Anything that jumps out at you about this week for people just looking around saying, what do we do here? I know your advice has been, don't overthink it, don't get cute. What do you have for them this week?
The quarterback position is going to be a huge point of contention because so many big-name quarterbacks were awful last week. Now, I'll say this. I tell people not to get cute. I tell people that you've got to stick with your studs. But, Brad, when your studs are not producing, and I'm not just talking about 1 week. I'm talking about, 2, 3, 4 weeks. We're talking about Brady. We're talking about Big Ben. We're talking about Breeze. We're talking about Goff, even Aaron Rodgers, who's banged up right now. I can see a scenario where if you have a Tom Brady, for example, you're starting Dak Prescott. I can see a scenario, for example, where if you have Jared Goff, maybe you're playing Baker Mayfield. And that is all really personal preference. Some people like to stick with their stars. But some of these guys have now failed to produce on a more extended basis. And it's become more of a trend than maybe a 1 or 2 week blip on the radar. So at this point, don't be afraid to start a guy like Dak Prescott. I get it. He had a bad week last week, but he's got a great matchup against Tampa Bay. Don't be afraid to start a guy like Baker Mayfield. Don't be afraid to start Mitchell Trubisky this week against the 49ers. And don't be afraid to start Lamar Jackson against the Chargers. He's been the eighth quarterback based on fantasy points over the last 4 weeks. You could very well end up taking home a championship while Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Jared Goff, among others, is on your bench.
Good stuff there. We'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Happy holidays, and thanks for visiting with us.
Merry Christmas, my friend. Take care.
Take care. There's Michael Fabiano with us right there at the NFL Network. Appreciate his time and his insight. Sports360AZ.com. Time now to turn our attention to the Diamondbacks. Big story, as I mentioned earlier this morning. I'm very pleased to see this. It's like an early Christmas gift when I see Diamondbacks and the name Garagiola alongside. Joe Garagiola Jr. is returning to the Diamondbacks. Of course, he was the general manager of the team, one of the architects that put it all together when they won the World Series. It's a terrific move by the Diamondbacks, but the why is what I wondered. And so Joe is nice enough to jump on board for a few minutes. Appreciate his time. How are you?
I'm well, Brad. How are you?
It's great. It's great to hear your voice, Joe, and it's terrific to have you back in the organization. Joe Garagiola Jr. is the special advisor to President and CEO Derek Hall. So how did this come about?
Well, some time ago, Derek reached out to the people at Major League Baseball and indicated that he wanted to talk to me about interest I might have in rejoining the organization. And they said, sure. And so that conversation began, and it went along and finally reached a positive result, and here we are today.
Yeah. When the phone rang or the text came in, did you have any idea that something was of interest? Did MLB tell you, hey, the Diamondbacks are going to be calling you? Or how did that work, Joe?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened. Derek had reached out to Dan Halem, and then in turn Dan called me and said, Derek was going to be calling you, and from our Major League Baseball's perspective, feel free to talk to him and see if what he's saying makes sense or has any appeal to you.
Joe Garagiola Jr. with us. He is rejoining the Diamondbacks. What are you going to be doing, Joe? I could use the Cotton Fitzsimmons line, like Cotton Fitzsimmons said, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything. What are you going to be doing here?
Well, I think, as we all remember Cotton fondly, he had a way of crystallizing the thought.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I'll be working on initially is the Diamondbacks' new academy down in the Dominican Republic, ironically being built on the same location as our very first academy that I was much involved with back in the early days. So I think that'll be a big project to work on. And then beyond that, we'll see what comes along. I mean, I am there to be helpful, to be useful, to bring to bear the experiences that I have had both at the team level and the last 13 or so years in the central office, and that's it. As I say, I'm there to be a resource.
The versatility, I think, that you can do a whole bunch of things. Why don't you give the fans an idea of what you were doing with MLB over the last 13 years?
Well, I did have the opportunity to get involved in a lot of areas. I did a lot in player discipline. I did a lot with respect to stadiums, both new ones and ones that were being refurbished. So I spent, a lot of time down in Miami as that ballpark was being built. I was over in San Diego a number of times when they redid their outfield configuration. There's other things that I was involved in. A lot of on-field stuff with respect to equipment and uniforms. The last few years, I've been very involved in sort of an arcane area, but nonetheless one that's very important to players. Official scoring appeals, which your listeners might be interested to know, number in the hundreds every year.
That was not an error. How could you call that an error? What are you talking
about?
That's
exactly right.
Well, it was not an error. What do you mean?
Not surprisingly, the Players Association a few years ago negotiated a fairly formalized framework for those appeals, which is a good thing, because as you know, it used to be the player would get on the dugout phone and call up to the PR director and insist he go over during the game and harass the official scorer. So,
which was always fun to watch.
It's kind of cleaned up a little bit. So I was involved in that. So as I say, a lot of different things. And who knows which of those things will turn out to be useful.
It's been no secret, Joe, about the building and the present spot and where it is, the dispute with the city, so on and so forth. Would you be involved in any building capacity, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, that's a big topic. Has a lot of ramifications. Renovations to Chase Field, part of it. I don't know. I don't know. I would like to think that if and when that really gets going, that some of the experience that I've had dealing with buildings and looking at ballparks would be of value.
Okay, for fans wanting to know about the on the field, Paul gets traded, Goldschmidt gets traded, and it's business side of it. You've been in that chair before. I'm one of those that says you've got to make tough decisions with payroll, market size, so on and so forth. What do you make out of where the team is heading here on the field in 2019?
Well, let me say this, sort of to the point, sort of not, I guess. As I said, my view of my role is to be helpful, and to the extent that Mike or any of his people think I can be useful, whether it's a rules question, which I spent a lot of time dealing with, or opinions on things, I'm happy to give them. I am not, capitalized, underlined, not coming in to be some sort of shadow presence in baseball operations. So I will leave the comments to the baseball operations people with respect to what the team is going to look like in 2019.
It's very fair, because I've had already a bunch of people asking on that very topic and their season ticket holders and fans. So I think it's very, very fair to put it out like that. Everything else for you to come back here is good. You're here in the Valley. Do you live here still? You and I have not seen each other. Are you based here now, or do you ever leave?
Yeah, still stayed here over the years. Did a lot of long distance commuting, which was not fun. I can assure you of that. I saw way more of Newark Airport than anyone needs to see in one lifetime.
And that's not an airport worth seeing over and over and over. So.
You know, you can do that airport pretty quickly. What's really nice is the number of people who are still with the Diamondbacks, who were there when I was there and when I left, to get their reaction, which has been overwhelmingly positive.
Sure.
And it just makes you feel good as a person, that people that you worked with and developed relationships with reciprocated the feelings that I have for them. And that's just really nice.
Yeah. No, I get it. This is the A1 story to me today, you coming back. I think it's great, and congratulations on that. It's a great move by the Diamondbacks. And I look forward to seeing you in person and catching up, Joe. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
Always good to hear the voice of Joe Garagiola Jr. Now on board with the Diamondbacks. Really solid. When I saw this, it's like, I'll be darned. Actually, I didn't say that. I said something else. But Diamondbacks hired Joe Garagiola Jr., a special advisor to the president and CEO. You know? when you just pick this up and look at it and say, that's good stuff there. Up next, Matt Worley, it is Talk to the Lopes, as we do every Wednesday. Talk to the Lopes, GCU, and our partnership. Focus in on the men's volleyball side. That's next. Busy day, letter of intent day, plenty of content up on the website that we are working on right now with Jordan and Eric. Other big story today, along with Joe G. Jr. returning to the Diamondbacks. I'm Brad Sismat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, and this week we focus in on a program that's really rising and just zooming up, and that's men's volleyball. Although Matt Worley is joining us now for a few minutes, I do have to wonder, who did Matt Worley make upset? Because when the schedule came out, it's, hey, by the way, you're going to open with number one Long Beach State. Good luck with that and have a great time. No, I'm just kidding. The coach joins us here. You actually like that schedule, I would think, Matt, right?
Yeah, you know, obviously there's some intention behind what coaches do. And, you know, last year we graduated 9 seniors, and this year we have 7 freshmen on board that are extremely talented and actually very mindful on the court as well at such a young age. So I wanted to test them early.
Yeah, welcome to GCU. By the way, here's who you open against. Have you sensed any looking at the schedule, hearing the kids chirp about it at all?
I think they're excited. You know, obviously going into our preseason practices here on December 28th, which is coming pretty quickly, the turnaround before our first match is we have about 5 days in the practice gym. So I don't even know if there's time to be nervous running into it so quickly.
And so your schedule, the way it works for fans that aren't aware, you can't work with these kids until the end of this month. You can't even observe them in a gym playing, or what are the rules in terms of what you can, can't do with a team before the season?
Yeah, so we had about 6 weeks of practice through the fall with a couple competition dates. We actually did get to see Long Beach play this fall and saw a couple of their teams, their A squad, their B squad, and we got some different lineups matched against them. But leading into finals week, we have to be entirely hands-off with our guys the week of finals and the week prior to finals. And then obviously I want them to get some time with their families, you know, before the long 4-month stretch of our season. So they're coming back December 26th and 27th. We'll do a team dinner at my house on the 27th to kind of kick off the season. And then we're right in the gym on the 28th. And like I said, we leave for Santa Barbara to play Long Beach, Santa Barbara and Cal State Northridge on January 2nd. So we're the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. It's a fast turnaround.
Yeah, it really is. The Lopes open their home portion of the schedule against Benedictine on January 11th over at Antelope Gymnasium. You mentioned the term mindful on the court in our opening comments. Dive into that a little bit and what it is that you're looking for in players in that term.
Sure. So, you know, when I'm out recruiting, and I just got back from Anaheim this past week and watching, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old volleyball, you know, I look for a couple of different things. I like look for intention and purpose on the court of what they're doing, as opposed to just going up and being a big brute and banging away at the ball. I want to see some mindful thoughtfulness, some on-court intelligence is, you know, obviously a good word for it. And the second thing I look for is somebody that plays with a chip on their shoulder. You know, they want to be able to compete, whether they're up 24-15 going into that set point or down 24-15. I want to see a kid that wants to compete. You know, we want to be proud of what we do day in and day out when we practice or we're in a match. So I want to see somebody that plays with a chip on their shoulder and also with that, you know, that on-court IQ.
So it's not the first metric being measurable, right? The height, weight is not your first metric that you look at?
You know, not so much. I mean, we have an expression because we've actually not been the biggest and most physical team in the past years. So we've also said, you know, just because you're big doesn't mean you're good.
Yep.
So we have to play a little bit smarter because we don't get away with certain things that some of the bigger athletes might get away with. But there's definitely a lot more to the sport of volleyball that I don't think people realize at times if you're not familiar with it. But it's a very, very strategic sport, just like anything else out there. It's just, it's different. You obviously, having the coaching mindset, you need to be able to look a little bit deeper into these athletes as opposed to just trying to get the talented kid.
No, that's really good. I think you and I, when we've talked in the past, I've mentioned I was a club volleyball dad, so I get it and what you're saying. I love the deep dive on it. You're ranked 14th in the preseason. Is that about right for what you see out of your team in the competition?
Yeah, you know, we, you know, like I said, how we lost so many athletes the past year and, you know, year or two, that we still have something to prove. I think that we've shown some progress and some growth and are gaining some more respect on the West Coast, especially since we switched conferences. But we still have something to prove because we are so young. We might start two or three freshmen this year. So I'd rather be placed at 14 than 10 with, you know, the expectation that we can really grow from where we're at. You know, we're also listed at 7 of 7 in our conference, which, you know, I'm hoping that lights a fire under these guys' butts mm-hmm. and we're, you know, ready to compete and prove something every day.
Because the conference, walk people through that. They may not be aware when you say you switched over and what that means, and because it's really going up.
Yeah. So this will be entering our second year in the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation. With the schools listed of UCLA, Stanford, Pepperdine, then we have ourselves, there's Concordia of Irvine, Brigham Young University, and I might be missing one there, I think, but there's programs like UCLA and Stanford and Pepperdine that have just a tremendous history within the sport that probably collect at least 50% of the national championships, you know, in the history of the game.
Well, and you also have home and homes with them too. So it's not like you're just going on the road. You've got to have Stanford's going to come to your place. You got to go to Stanford. What a great experience for players and to walk into those environments and to have a school like Pepperdine come rolling into Antelope Gymnasium in mid-February. I think that's terrific. What do you like most about this team as you get ready to start the season? I know you haven't seen them on the floor, but I'm sure you have a general idea. What do you like most?
You know, we've been really focused. So we had a tough time kind of deciding what our personality was going to be as a team this year, because every year you have new guys in and, you know, old guys out. So you kind of create a different culture each year. And I was a little bit worried about how quiet, reserved, but in the end, we realized that was more attributed to just their level of focus in our practice gym. So I truly believe that whatever we throw at these guys, whether it's too much information on a scouting report, they're going to be totally willing to try to process it mm-hmm. and figure it out as a group, even though they are such a young group of guys.
What concerns you coming into this season? Is it just the youth and inexperience, or is it something you're looking at and saying, I got to get this fixed?
Yeah, you know, this is the toughest schedule we will have ever faced. Obviously, our conference schedule is very, very tough, but our out-of-conference schedule with Long Beach, Santa Barbara, Northridge, Loyola of Chicago, who's always a top-10 program, George Mason from back east, our out-of-conference schedule is really tough. I'm hoping that the grind from the first match to our 28th match isn't too tough on these guys. You know, I don't want to break them down at a young age. I want them to really realize that we have the ability with our talent and our mindfulness to win matches. I want them to see that right away, and then mm-hmm. hopefully that just kind of bursts our growth in like this exponential way for years to come as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if we end up really upsetting some people this year based on these rankings.
That's good stuff. We're talking with Matt Worley, talk to the Lopes, head men's volleyball coach for GCU. I'm looking up and down your roster, and I see Carlsbad, where I grew up. I see Hawaii. I see Turkey. I see Belgium. I see Russia. I see Maryland. I see Virginia. My first thought is, what a great recruiting budget. Second thought, in all seriousness, is you find these guys in club here in the States, or do you recruit worldwide? How's that work?
You know, initially when I came on board, there were definitely some things that I went overseas to get, because those so you'll see the setter from Turkey, and then there's an opposite from Belgium. Those are both 6'7", 6'8", athletes that mm-hmm. if those guys were playing in the States, they might have been recruited at 16 years old. So the foreign athletes you can actually pick up a little bit later. So as I first started as the head coach, you know, 4 years ago, I had to kind of salvage some things with some rosters and find some late additions. I like the diversity that brings in terms of personality, and the training that they get obviously overseas is very different than what you get in the States, even from the training that you get in Chicago to the training in California. So the diversity to the roster, I think, adds a whole new element. But I also like having the relationship with the clubs in the United States, because we build from that. So this past weekend, and you see the Carlsbad Dame, there's, you know, Christian Janke and Camden Gianni that are both top 50 recruits in the country this past year. They're high school All-Americans. you know, those clubs now I have such a strong relationship with because the feedback that they're giving their coaches and directors and, you know, previous teammates of theirs, that kids are really starting to see that GCU is a program that's on the map and something to really respect. And it's those relationships go a long way in terms of recruiting as well.
Okay, and I don't mean this question to sound flip towards one way or another, but do you just look at specific club in this day and age, not a specific club, but does club volleyball mean more than high school volleyball?
Yeah, I totally believe that. You know, a lot of the states run high school volleyball. They coincide with our season. So it's tough for these coaches to get out there. But the product can be a little bit diluted when it gets to high school, too. So the club teams ultimately end up being almost all-star teams for that certain region or, you know, city for that matter. So it's a little bit easier for us to kind of go to a tournament and see the top 10 teams that include, you know, maybe the 10 best players in that area, as opposed to going to high school matches, you might see one of them against a team that might not be competing as well to really kind of challenge and exploit certain weaknesses and strengths that we want to see.
Sure. And I have people on the high school level that get mad at me about this, but I tell them now that I've been through it, it's guys, you have to play club. I'm sorry to be so direct or so blunt about it, but it doesn't matter if it's club water polo or club volleyball or club softball, or I've done all these with all four of my kids, but in volleyball in particular, if you're not playing club, you're not gonna get recognized 99% of the time, I believe.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, there might be that case where there's, you know, some superstar that just plays multiple high school sports and doesn't have the ability to play club just with too much going on. But that's a very, very rare circumstance.
Yeah, or finances, too, I found. You know,
and
a lot of times clubs will try to work with them. Good stuff, Matt. I like doing the deep dive. It's to be informational to people that take this content in. And appreciate the time. Best of luck this season.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me on.
Sure. There's Matt Worley with us, head volleyball coach on the men's side at GCU. That is Talk to the Lopes for this week.